Bruce Pratt is here for Sports Lit 101. And our next guest on the program is an assistant professor of communication at William Patterson University, worked at the New York Daily News, has written for The Times, The Wall Street Journal, and The Hockey News, and he is the author of a terrific new book entitled We Want Fish Sticks, The Bizarre and Infamous Rebranding of the New York Islanders. Nick Hershon, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Love the book, and it's we were talking earlier. It's one of the most bizarre stories in professional sports, I think, of the last 50 years.
Yeah, it's really kind of crazy to see how much the New York Islanders went through in a 20-month period. It's kind of more than most teams go through in 28 years, as I say in the book. The fact that you would change your logo, have fans protest it, players refusing to report to the team, a crazy coach, a con artist buying the team, it really ran the gamut, and it was a great topic for a book for me.
Well, John Spano, he has, I think, the job description I would like to have, which is pretend billionaire.
That's right. And John Spano, for those people who are not familiar with the history of the New York Islanders, is this guy who originally is presented as a Texas billionaire who's going to pay for the New York Islanders and rebuild their crumbling arena, Nassau Coliseum, get all these elite players to play for them. And then it turns out that he's a con artist. So after he takes official control of the team, he ends up bouncing checks that he can't pay for the team in the sale and ends up behind bars. And it's just one of these many aspects of Islanders history that's so sad about what the fans had to go through. They thought they finally had their messiah. And then, as I title one of the chapters in the book, he goes from the savior to a devil. That's one of his own quotes about what happened to him during this period.
Well, the Islanders started out fast. I mean, we can talk about Vegas last year. That's a whole different scenario. But I remember listening to Bill Mazur's afternoon sports show when the Islanders had first published their training camp roster. People calling and saying, you know, these guys could be pretty good with Billy Smith. They could be real contenders soon. They rocketed up. They got to where they won four Stanley Cups in a row. And then the downturn is as odd as the whole Spano story is. If you could sort of give it a little background to that, and it would lead up to why they decided they needed to rebrand.
Well, the Islanders started in 1972, and then, as you mentioned, they're this expansion team that meets a lot of quick success because within a few years they're making the playoffs, and then by 1980 they win their first Stanley Cup. They go on to win four in a row. So Islanders fans, in a way, get a little bit spoiled. They're just used to winning. They're seeing all these Hockey Hall of Famers, Mike Bossy, Dennis Potvin, Billy Smith, on and on. And then the bottom kind of falls out after that. They hold on to some of these dynasty era players a little bit longer than maybe they should. They get into some bad contracts. The NHL is changing, and it's harder for teams to hold on to stars if they're in a small market. And the Islanders owner, John Pickett, who was around for the dynasty years, he ends up moving away to Florida, and he puts the control of the team with this minority stakeholder group known as the Gang of Four. And those guys, with good intentions, start to make some decisions that don't make a lot of sense. And as you kind of alluded to there, in the spring of 1994, the Islanders face the New York Rangers, their arch rivals, in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and they get embarrassingly swept. They lose four straight games. They get outscored 22-3. And fans call it the tennis series because the scores of each game were more like tennis scores than hockey scores, 6-0, 6-0, 5-2, 5-1. And the Islanders ownership thinks, all right, we really need to rebrand because people are starting to associate our original logo with this loss to the Rangers instead of the increasingly distant run of four straight Stanley Cups. That's really not true. They're kind of misjudging the fan base there, but that was the idea. So they think, all right, we need to go to some sort of a new symbol that would differentiate ourselves from the New York Rangers. They're in the big city, taxi cabs, subways, pigeons, all that kind of stuff. We need something that kind of evokes more Long Island, maritime culture, and that's where they eventually settle on this fisherman.
One of the things that I found so odd about them is I can understand them wanting to be identified with Long Island, though they're currently in Brooklyn, but that they wanted to be identified with the island and not with the Hamptons, not with anything but that maritime culture, the sort of seaman's culture. They didn't really need to have that logo to do that, and they hired one of the best people in the world to do this at the time. What do you think drove them to think that was going to work?
Well, they hired SME, as you mentioned, one of the best sports branding firms, short for Sean Michael Edwards, and they had done some really terrific designs before. They had the Toronto Raptors logo, the dinosaur that was very popular. They did the Florida Panthers, the Pouncing Panther coming out at you. And so they had a good track record. And they thought that these cartoonish kind of logos have been doing very well. In the NHL in particular, the San Jose Sharks and the Anaheim Mighty Ducks had come out with logos in previous years that rocketed to the top of jersey sales even before those teams had played a single game. So they thought maybe we're going to sell a lot of jerseys outside of our market if we have kind of funky-looking fishermen. And they're just hoping at one point even for rappers on MTV to be wearing this kind of a jersey in their music videos, just spreading the Islanders brand all around in a way that the Islanders franchise does not have the money to do. The problem is that a lot of these other teams that had rebranded, like the Ducks and the Sharks, had never existed before they started with this new logo. The Islanders already had a great history, and so when they changed their logo, fans view this as a betrayal. Why are you moving away from our original Islanders logo? That's from the dynasty years. And then, of course, the fisherman that they developed looks a lot like the guy from the Gorton's Fisherman, seafood box. And a lot of people make that comparison. That inspired the title of my book because opposing fans used to chant, "We want fish sticks." And that's the way that I decided to go with the title of my book.
We're talking with Nick Hirshon about his wonderful book, We Want Fish Sticks. And the other decision that went hand in hand with the descent of the Islanders was the replacement of Lorne Henning. He'd been kind of the hand-selected guy to follow up after Al Arbour retired and to go with a former Bruin, Mike Milbury, who was just, as it turned out, a terrible fit for this team.
Yeah, that was a really sad part of, when I was doing my research, I was looking at all the newspaper coverage at the time, and all the local newspapers were encouraging, pleading with the Islanders, you have to hire Mike Milbury. He had led the Bruins to the Stanley Cup final. He had been a kind of well-known defenseman, probably best known for getting suspended after he climbed the boards at a game at Madison Square Garden and started fighting with Rangers fans in the stands, including beating one man with his own shoe in the late 70s. But he, at the time, was on ESPN as an analyst, and so he had a kind of name brand recognition that the Islanders were craving, and he seemed like one of the best coaches on the market. So they spend a lot of money to get him. As you say, they're moving away from some of these dynasty figures like Henning, and fans also realize that, and they start to see that all of these players that we love are being maybe disrespected, changing the logo, changing the coach to a guy like Mike Milbury, who actually was on a lot of Bruins teams that were facing the Islanders in the early 80s in the playoffs. So Mike Milbury turns out to be a terrible choice. He shoves and spits at his players. He makes crazy comments to the press. And he just tries a lot of different tactics that don't work with this mix of rookies and veterans. He, I think, mistakes some of the lack of talent on his roster for a lack of passion. And that's a big problem where these guys want to win. They're trying their best, but they're not as talented as the team that he had with Cam Neely, for example, and Ray Bourque of the Bruins. I mean, these are guys who have just been drafted or who are at the end of their careers. The Islanders didn't have the budget to spend on those guys, and so they immediately clash with Milbury, and then soon the fans turn against him.
Yeah, when I was younger, and the Islanders were doing pretty well, and Bill Torrey was with them, even though I'm a diehard Rangers fan, I had a soft spot in my heart for the Islanders because Bill Torrey went to the same prep school I went to, and I used to sort of try and follow them. I never understood why the Islanders felt, and it seemed to me Islander fans for a long time felt that they were somehow inferior to the Rangers, even though they had won 4 Stanley Cups and we beat them once in the playoffs. There seemed to be a lingering sort of sense that they deserved better, but they were never going to get better. Do you think that played into some of these decisions?
For sure. I think that still goes on today, honestly. As someone myself who grew up in Queens, New York, which is in New York City, but is also part of Long Island technically, and always gets short shrift compared to Manhattan, it's the same thing. And I spent a lot of time growing up going to Islanders games, being on Long Island. And I think there's always this idea of we're in the shadow of the big city. And we may have Nassau Coliseum, but we'll never be as big as Madison Square Garden. And we have the New York Islanders, but we're not an original six franchise like the New York Rangers. And there's just always going to be that sort of lack of media attention. You know, the big New York City papers, sports radio, TV, they're focusing on the Rangers. It's just easier to get to Rangers games. The Rangers always had more money to spend because they're pulling from this high-density area. The Islanders, even when they were winning the Stanley Cups, from what I understand, I wasn't following, I wasn't alive at that time, But I don't think that they were really getting the kind of attention that the Rangers would have gotten if they had that kind of a dynasty. So that continues to this day. You know, right now the Islanders are in first place in the Metropolitan Division. They're doing really well. And they're still not getting the kind of back page coverage that the Rangers would. So, yes, during this time, they're trying to do anything to stand out in the marketplace. And they can't compete with the Rangers and the Devils. And the Rangers win the Stanley Cup for the first time in 54 years in 1994. Then the Devils go on and win it in 1995. And the Islanders are the third team in this market. And hockey is kind of always the fourth sport in this market to begin with. So they're trying to find some way to do something to stand out. They figure maybe having a big-name coach like Milbury, having a Fisherman logo that's selling well, maybe that's a way to get on people's radar.
Well, you bring up a good point. The three teams, as the crow flies, are located within 30 miles of one another. Detroit can talk about being hockey town. Montreal can talk about being hockey town. But they're three professional franchises. And as you point out, it's not the number one sport. It may overtake football if the Giants and Jets keep going the way they're going. But in a market like that where you're competing for media, do you think that they thought if they identified with Long Island that there was more potential revenue and fan base in Rhode Island on Long Island that they hadn't tapped previously?
Yes, especially on the eastern end of Long Island, because the Islanders play in Nassau County. As where Nassau Coliseum is, it's the westernmost county closer to the city. They were trying to tap into the fan base potentially out on the east end of Long Island, like the Hamptons. And that's where they actually get inspiration for this logo and for this mascot that they use is the East Hampton Baymen's Association is a group of fishermen who are popularized by a Billy Joel song in the late 80s named Downeaster Alexa, where he talks about their struggles and how they're fighting new state restrictions on how much they can catch. And they think that, well, maybe if we appeal to the Long Island identity, we can get folks like these fishermen and just other neighborhood people out on the end of Long Island to start coming to our games. But it's less dense out there. There's a long commute between the Hamptons, let's say, and Nassau Coliseum. So are people really going to do that, go to a 7 o'clock game and then end up getting home at midnight if you got work the next day or whatever? It's just not a really logical fit. So I think it was all well-intentioned, but it just ended up failing miserably.
And even Newsday out on Long Island did essentially a mock obituary for the fishermen, right?
Yeah, that was pretty funny. And there were a few false starts there about when the fisherman is actually going to die. The Islanders try to get rid of it almost as soon as they adopt it, and the NHL tells them, well, you can't get rid of it for the next season because all these sports goods stores are going to have extra jerseys on the shelves that they can't sell because the team isn't wearing anymore, so they have to keep it a little bit longer. But yes, Newsday writes a kind of funny obituary about the end of the Fisherman logo, even though it has come back, so I guess it does have another life, and the Islanders wore it for a one-night promotion in 2015. They're starting to sell it again at Nassau Coliseum, but a lot of fans were very happy to see the logo go and the original logo come back.
Well, Nick, it's a wonderful read. We had a blast enjoying this book, and it's great to talk with you about We Want Fish Sticks, the bizarre and infamous rebranding of the New York Islanders. We thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks a lot, Bruce and Rich. I really appreciate the time.
That's Nicholas Hershon. Thanks. Check out the book, We Want Fish Sticks.
Oh, yeah, and we would chant that in the garden, too. We want fish sticks. We want fish sticks. Yeah, because, you know, they'd only whipped us for all those times. And then in 94, we finally won.
Bruce was on the team, apparently.
No, I know.
Next week on Sports Lit 101, we're talking
Citizen Okoye. This book is really a marvelous book, and it's. We'll talk about it obviously at length next week, but it's about a young man from South Sudan, a refugee, who ends up in Omaha, Nebraska, leads his high school team to four NCAA championships, and ends up playing college basketball at both Louisville and SMU. But that's just the tip of the story, and it's really, really a compelling read. It's very well written. It's very quick to read, and he is currently still playing in college. So. It's that contemporary book. Really, really good. Citizen Okoye, A-K-O-Y. I think that's how you pronounce it. I'll get all the names right.
All right. Steve Morant's the author, and we'll talk about the book next week. I look forward to reading it next Wednesday here on Downtown.